Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. Today, we are going to start our preview of the Super Bowl, the upcoming game between the Chiefs and the 49ers on Sunday. And today, we're going to talk about the battle in the trenches. We're going to talk about the line of scrimmage, and I am very excited to have this man on to talk about that. A longtime NFL player, my colleague at ESPN, one of the smartest people doing it. It is Damian Woody. Damian, how are you, sir?
Bill, it is a pleasure. I am doing great, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. I'm here in Vegas. I'm outside. There's like a roller coaster outside my window. We may get some roller coaster sound in the background as we record here. But excited about this game. Really fun matchup. And I wanted to have you on, like I said, to talk about the battle in the trenches from a not only someone who watches the game closely now, but someone who played offensive line in the NFL for a long time. But I have to start with this. Like, I've never played in the Super Bowl. Not something I expect to happen in the next few years for me. But thankfully, I know someone who did play in a Super Bowl. So Damian, just from your perspective to start, what's it like playing in a Super Bowl? What are your memories of that week, of that game? Like what was your experience like? Did it feel different from a normal game for you?
Yeah, listen, first of all, it was unlike anything I've ever experienced before. Obviously, when you reach the pinnacle of your profession, it's something that, it's hard to wrap your mind around. You know, the two Super Bowls that I was a part of, Super Bowl 36 against the Rams and then Super Bowl 38 against the Carolina Panthers, you obviously felt the magnitude, how big it was by all the, you know, the media presence and how it was covered. But I do have to say, the way that Coach Belichick set everything up, he made sure that we were dialed in. Like, we didn't feel the external, pressure of the game per se. He was just so focused on being present in the moment, you know, every meeting, every practice, every hour of the day. He did not want you to focus on, all the external festivities. He just wanted you to focus on, let's just finish the job. We've come this far. Let's finish the job. And once the job is done, then we can enjoy all the spoils and everything that comes with it. But I think that's why at least for me, what was so unique about both of those experiences.
Mm-hmm. Did you, when the game started, like first snap of the game, were you like, oh man, this is the Super, like was there a period where once the game started, you kind of had to settle in, or from the first snap was it just like, no, this is business now that we're out here?
Yeah, I will have to say one moment that really got me was Super Bowl 36. It was the player introduction. Obviously, we were coming off 9/11 beginning of that year, and running out of the tunnel, Bill. I honestly, it might have been outside of my immediate family. I don't know if there's a moment that would ever match that. The energy, the crowd, everything, and once we got through the introduction. Because we came out, as a team, we didn't come out as individuals. But you literally, once you got to the sideline, we had to like refocus because the energy was so crazy in the down there in New Orleans that we had to refocus and say, okay, now we have a game to play. We got to really focus on what's important here, and that's going up against the greatest show on turf, who was favored by 14 points.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a unique experience. Like, I think people think about the Patriots as like the favorites. They think about them as like, the bullies, the evil empire in so many ways. Like, you go that far back, it's like the Patriots were underdogs. They were the team that people were rooting for. It was like they were happy to be there almost. Like, it was such a different experience than the Patriots later on. In terms of that Rams game, I have another question for you, and then we'll get to the game coming up on Sunday. From your perspective, fourth quarter of that game, you've been leading pretty much the entire game. Rams come back and tie it up with like a minute and a half to go. And I know you weren't watching this, but John Madden was on TV saying Bill Belichick's gotta go to overtime. A second year quarterback who's inexperienced. We didn't know what Tom Brady was going to be. He had, he'd been hurt the prior game in the AFC Championship game. It wasn't like, we had the Brady magic that we knew from what's going to happen in the years to come. Bill Belichick did not kneel down and go to overtime. He sent Brady back out. You guys moved the ball, set up Adam Vinatieri for a game winning field goal. From your perspective in that moment, were you surprised that Belichick, you know, didn't kind of just like kneel on the ball and calm things down and go to overtime? Were you surprised that you guys tried to score and then did score and win the game?
No, we weren't surprised. It's almost the discussion is almost like how, you know, analytics is viewed today. You know, there's such a there's such a discussion about analytics today. It's almost like it almost mirrors that, you know, during that period, because most people say, oh, okay, let's just kneel and go to overtime and play out from there. But no, but Coach Belichick was the thing was, Bill, was that like Bill knew our preparation was so great, especially situational football. I think that's where we were just head and shoulders above everyone else, was that in these certain situations, you know, we were so dialed in. And even against a really great opponent in the St. Louis Rams, it just felt like we would be able to make the necessary plays in order to execute in that moment to win that game, to put ourselves in position to win that game. And so he left no doubt. It wasn't even a big discussion about it. It was like, okay, what's going to be the opening play call? Because we all know in a 2-minute drive, the opening play call, it's really a determining factor in how successful you're going to be in a 2-minute drive. So there was no discussion about, you know, taking a knee. It was, let's go win it. Let's go win it right now.
The J.R. Redmond drive.
Yes.
Three catches on that drive. Troy Brown gets a 23-yarder. Local boy Jermaine Wiggins gets a 6-yarder. And then Adam Vinatieri hits the field goal to win it. Pretty cool moment for the Patriots. Pretty cool one for Damian Woody. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better with the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country. There is no competition. And right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a Jets Pizza location near you. Again, try Jets Signature 8-Corner Pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, SAVE. Jets Pizza, better because it has to be.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's talk about this Chiefs-Niners game. And I want to start on the Chiefs side of things from your perspective as a former offensive lineman. Now, you blocked for a lot of different quarterbacks over your career. I would venture to say, you can correct me if I'm wrong, nobody you blocked for is like Patrick Mahomes. How much more difficult is it from, you know, the perspective of a lineman? How much harder is it to block for a quarterback from like Mahomes, given his pocket movement, given like his improvisational skills, given how he plays the game, versus like, you know, a Tom Brady, where he's more just a traditional, you know, 3-step drop, 5-step drop, I'm getting the ball out?
Yeah, you know, I tend to like, you know, most people think that it's very difficult because when a quarterback with the athletic profile of Patrick Mahomes, people think, oh, well, you know, you don't know what a quarterback is, so it can kind of bait you into holding calls and so on and so forth. But I just take a different view on it because of his ability to maneuver not only inside the pocket but outside the pocket. Mm-hmm. Man, he can really save you from a lot of things that goes on, because teams bring all types of stunts and games, you know, blitzes and all those type of things. And sometimes we need a quarterback to bail us out. It's not necessarily Bill, it's not necessarily,
it's true.
You know, with Tom, it was from the neck up, you know, he was just so in tune with what defense was trying to do. But when you got a guy who not only has the football IQ from the neck up, but the athletic ability to really punish and hurt the defense in those moments, man, that's an asset that you can't complain about at all. So I know for me, if I had a quarterback like that, man, I would be jumping for joy, because we all know the ones that's like, you know, out of all the stats that people tend to use against linemen, the one, you know, the one is sacks. You don't want to have sacks attached to you. And Patrick Mahomes can get you out of a lot of those type of things.
Yeah, he's an eraser when it comes to that stuff. And that's been a big thing for them. I'm writing about this in my preview this week for the Super Bowl. You know, like, he's so good at avoiding sacks, at you know, taking pressures and either getting the ball out or getting away from the pressure or scrambling for a gain. Like, he, so many negative plays that would exist with a different kind of quarterback get erased because of how good his movement is, you know, in the pocket, out of the pocket. He's a difference maker. I mean, that Jets game, I know, of course, you watch the Jets closely. I'm sorry that you had to go through that this year, but the Jets, that Chiefs-Jets game, so much of what the Chiefs did in that game was Mahomes scrambling.
Absolutely, because, you know, and that's part of the IQ of the quarterback, right? We talk about the greatness of Patrick Mahomes. Well, listen, in certain situations, mm-hmm. for you to know that, okay, this team plays man in this particular situation, you're able to go out there, survey what the defense is doing, and then know, hey, let me just take off because their backs are turned. Like, those mm-hmm. are back-breaking type of plays. And in that game, Bill, as you well know, he did that quite a few times that really broke down that Jets defense and mm-hmm. ultimately ended up scoring the game winning. You know, he helped, you know, facilitate the game winning score in that game. But, mm-hmm. you know, that's part of what we talk about. The one thing that I love about Patrick Mahomes is it seems like he keeps his team on schedule. He doesn't have negative plays. People don't understand mm-hmm. how incredibly important that is, because it's hard to have 10, 12 play drives, because one negative play can just absolutely, you know, kill a drive. But it mm-hmm. just doesn't seem like that happens with Patrick Mahomes. He keeps his team on schedule. He doesn't have many turnover worthy plays. And that's important, especially when you're going up against a really good opponent.
So huge. And especially now that he's throwing shorter passes, that offense is not as explosive as it was during the Tyreek Hill days. They have to be efficient. They have to stay on schedule. And he does such a good job of that. And he gets help. I mean, obviously, Patrick Mahomes is a great player, but they have Travis Kelce, they have Isaiah Pacheco, and they have, especially on the interior of their line, a very good offensive line. But that is with Joe Tooney involved, who's been such a big part of their offensive line over the past couple of years since leaving from the Patriots. We don't know if he's going to play. It's touch and go as we record this. He suffered a pec injury in the Bills game, did not play against the Ravens. Obviously, he's a great player, Damian, but in terms of the preparation, in terms of the continuity, in terms of, you know, just the familiarity of having a player next to you on the line and having to sub somebody else in fresh off the bench, how much does it hurt? Like, how do you have to change the way you prepare and the way you play as a lineman with, you know, having a new player step in next to you in a big moment like this?
Yeah, Bill. So, you know, so much about offensive line play is about continuity, right? You know, that's what mm-hmm. it's all about, because ultimately you want to be able to – you want to get to a point on an offensive line where you don't even have – you know what the guy next to you is going to do without even making a call. You know, those mm-hmm. are the really elite offensive lines. We've seen some of these lines, you know, especially in the latter part of the season and in the postseason. So when you take out a player like Joe Tooney, I mean, it definitely hurt, because I always feel like you're only as good as the guy that you're playing next to, right? Yep. And so mm-hmm. when you take out an all-pro type player, it hurts. But Bill, I'm glad that you brought up Joe Tooney, because it just shows you – and I just go back to, you know, last week's game in the AFC Championship game. Think about mm-hmm. that. You're on the road against Baltimore. You don't have your all-pro player at guard. And just think how well the Kansas City Chiefs executed on offense.
Yep.
Now, they only scored 3 points in the second half, but the way they were able to manage the game, you know, all those type of things, it just speaks to not only the greatness of the coaches, particularly Andy Reid and the coaching staff. And by the way, for people out there who don't know, Andy Reid is a former offensive lineman, so mm-hmm. he would know how to handle that situation. But everyone involved being able to adapt, you know, and adjust with a very fine player being out, you know, that, like, those type of things, they don't tend to, like, be talked about on, you mm-hmm. know, in the media. But as a former player, I know how important, you know, it is for guys to adapt and adjust when you have those, you know, that type of player out in those type of situations.
It's so big. And, you know, like, Nick Allegretti did a good job. Like, he had his moments here and there. I think you know, they kind of held him up a bit on that 4th-and-1 where they got stuffed. But, like, you don't have to be perfect. And you're going to have moments where you're not an all-pro caliber guard. That's just the reality. You don't have all-pro players on your bench. But I thought they did such a good job. You know, they protected Mahomes. He Yeah, Mahomes did the work as well, but they were effective running the football. They controlled the clock against the Ravens. Like, that was a, you know, a really complete performance, I think, from that Chiefs offense. One other guy I want to talk about on the Chiefs, and this is why, one of the reasons I had you on, you, of course, played many positions on the offensive line. I don't know how you did this. You're a lunatic managing to play multiple offensive line spots at a high level, but you were a center at one point in your career, and Creed Humphrey, the center of the Chiefs, is a very good center, but he's had an issue snapping the ball. Multiple low snaps during the game last week, and I was going back and I was watching the Eagles game from last year, not to watch Humphrey, just kind of watching in general, kind of get some, you know, just refresh my mind before this game. And even that third down play where James Bradbury holds right at the end of the game, another low snap from Creed Humphrey. And, you know, I wonder, like, from your perspective, Creed Humphrey's a good player. Obviously, he's not sitting there thinking, man, I don't care about where the snap goes. I'm going to put it low and Patrick will figure it out later. Like, he wants to deliver good snaps. But why do you think we see centers, even good centers, have an issue with snapping the ball low or rolling the ball on the ground here or there? What do you think's happening there?
Well, you're talking to the exact right guy in this moment. I had this exact same issue, you know, when I was playing early on in my career as well. And I think it's for a couple of reasons. Number one, you're so mentally tied up into, okay, I got this guy right over top of me. I got to make these calls, because everyone knows the quarterback. I mean, the center is the quarterback on the offensive line. You're trying to lay calls, you know, all those type of things. And, you know, the Chiefs are playing on the road, so you got to deal with crowd noise. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that goes into it. And sometimes just the most basic thing is taken for granted. And it's just the quarterback-center exchange, right? Like that, no play starts without the quarterback-center exchange. And a lot of it has to do with just the rhythm in which you're snapping the ball. It's the rhythm. You know what I mean? It's the rhythm and how you're doing it. Because anytime you break rhythm, you know, that's how you get these low snaps, and then sometimes it becomes psychological. So those are the two things that I think for most centers who have those type of issues, particularly in the game, those are the things that typically lead to these type of low snaps.
Was it something where, like, you know, during practice you'd snap and there'd be no issue, and then in the game you'd struggle with it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. I'd go out there and practice and just, you know, boom, perfect, boom, perfect, boom, perfect, boom, perfect. And then you get in the game, and, you know, it's the you know, everything that comes with the center position, and you know, you're focusing on all, everything, you know, focusing on line calls, make sure everyone is where they're supposed to be. And then, but your rhythm isn't there. And then once your rhythm's not there, then it becomes a, you know, a psychological thing, because you get to the sideline and the quarterback or the coach is like, hey, man, your snap's below, or your snap is to the left or to the right, you know, because, listen, the quarterback's job is hard enough as it is.
Yeah.
You compound that with, you know, low snaps, and the quarterback got to deviate off his spot to try to, you know, try to catch a snap. It just makes his job a lot harder. So, you know, I've been there. I get it. And it's it definitely can wear on you, you know, it can wear on you mentally.
Is there anything that you found helped? You know, did you feel like you fixed it at some point?
Yeah, listen, for me, man, it was just more of just trying to relax. It's just relaxing and just being in rhythm. Okay, don't do anything different. The technique is the technique. It's not anything that's rocket science. But you just literally just toss the ball back to the quarterback. It's just really that simple. Just toss the ball back to the quarterback. Everything else is going to be fine. And as long as you have that in your mind mentally, that should kind of rectify the situation.
Man, that is something that did not occur to me. Just relax. Just chill. That's like the anxiety of just living on a day-to-day basis is too stressful for me, let alone the anxiety of being an NFL center. Again, one of the many reasons I could not do the job you did. Let's switch to the 49ers perspective. And obviously, you look at their line, the guy who stands out is Trent Williams. From your perspective, how dominant of a player is he in your eyes? How does he compare to the great left tackles you saw, you played with, you played against in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you're talking about, you know, probably the preeminent left tackle of kind of this era. And, you know, the one thing about Trent is, you know, I marvel at his athletic ability. I think Trent is like, what, 34? I mean, think about it. Like, for a guy his age to be as athletic as he is, even at the age he's at right now, it's phenomenal. Yeah, he has the technique. He's the strength and all type of thing, but it's the athletic ability to be able to do things that, quite honestly, a lot of guys just can't do. And so I look at him, and, you know, for me, when I think of, like, left tackles, I think of, like, Walter Jones. Like, Walter Jones, to me, is the – he is the staple. He is, you know, what everybody – every tackle aspires to be. And for me, Trent Williams is a guy that's – he's up there. He's up there because he has everything you want, but the athletic ability just really stands out.
Yeah, I mean, he's 35 years old. And
my bad. I thought he was 34.
You undersold him. You said he's a spry, 34-year-old. I'm sure he appreciates that. I remember a couple of years ago, they were bringing him in motion and using him to, like, you know, kick out the lineman on the other side of the field, like, you know, before at the snap. Like, that's not something you do with offensive linemen in general, let alone at that point, 33-34-year-old offensive linemen. Just it feels like he's one of a kind right now.
I would agree. Like, it's rare. Like, I remember I think it was a Green Bay game, playoff game, where you just saw him, you know, in motion, you know, the way that the 49ers like to do a lot of their running plays where they have guys in motion. And you just saw, I'm sitting there, I'm like, wait a minute. Did I just see Trent Williams running in motion on that running play? Like, it's a freak show, man. He's literally a freak show.
Yeah, it is such a unique thing. It's sort of like, you know, like, you see Jason Kelce, and he pulls more than the vast majority of centers. He's leading on lead draw more often than most centers, it feels like. You know, Trent Williams is kind of that player at left tackle. But you look at the other guys on this line. It's not stars. It's not expensive players. It's Jake Brendel, Colton McKivitz, Aaron Banks, John Feliciano. You know, guys signed for not much money. Day two, day three picks, undrafted guys. And again, I feel bad bringing up the Jets again, but I know you pay close attention to the Jets. I know you watched their line fall apart this year. Mm-hmm. The Niners have a line that's not, like, expensive outside of Trent Williams. There's not stars. There's not, you know, guys who are household names. There's not first round picks. It's undrafted free agents, guys who are day two, three players. So how do you, or what do you attribute the success of the Niners managing to thrive on offense with these guys who aren't household names, who aren't big money players? How are they pulling this off?
Well, comparing it to the Jets, number one thing, they are available, right? And when I say available, that means they're playing. You know, the one thing in the Joe Douglas, Robert Saleh era, you know, that's probably been the most glaring thing. And there's been a lot of glaring things as it relates to the Jets organization. But that's probably been the most glaring thing, is their offensive line and their inability to have guys playing together for any extended period of time. Like, in order for you to become a great offensive line, or just a good offensive line, you have to play together, because you literally, your number one job as a line coach, you got to get five guys to play as one. And so you can't do that if guys are constantly hurt or out. And that's the one thing, these great offensive lines, you know, we talk about, you know, whether it was the Philadelphia Eagles last year or the Detroit Lions this year, you know, we talk about the San Francisco 49ers. The common thread, common denominator, yes, they do have a good player, but 9 times out of 10, these guys are playing together. They're not out injured. So if you want to be a good offensive line, you got to be available. And clearly the 49ers pretty much have been available all season long.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And it is something that we underestimate. You know, I think for a lot of fans, I don't want to, you know, obviously fans are not going to pay attention to the stars and the playmakers. Like, the thing you see about the line is the graphic as the game starts, and you see the five linemen, and you're like, oh, that guy's missing, or oh, I don't know who that guy is. But it's such a big difference maker. And the Niners have been, they've had a couple injuries here and there, but relatively healthy. Whereas the Jets, I mean, down to third and fourth string linemen at different stretches, guys like Dwayne Brown, who weren't able to stay healthy, Elijah Vera Tucker, not able to stay healthy. It's just been brutal for them this year. From your perspective, and this is more of a general offensive question, and I just thought about this thinking about how, you know, Bill Belichick approached that game against the Rams, and the Rams had so many stars on offense. They had Marshall Faulk, Torrey Holt, Isaac Bruce, even Ricky Prohl. You know, they had such a talented offense, and Bill Belichick said, okay, we're going to beat up Marshall Faulk. We're not going to stop him, but we're going to, you know, he's going to be the focal point of what we try to stop on this offense, and we'll figure out the rest from there. So from your perspective, look at the Niners. It might be better, frankly. This is a legit historic group of weapons here. Christian McCaffrey, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, Deebo Samuel, even Kyle Juszczyk is going to make plays in this offense. If you're Steve Spagnuolo, if you're the defensive coordinator of the Chiefs, and there's one guy from that bunch where you feel like, okay, if we slow this guy down, we have a chance. So we're going to make sure we do something to either slow down or remove that guy from the game plan. Who do you think he should be targeting to try and at least slow down in the context of that offense?
Yeah, it's easy for me. It's Christian McCaffrey. I mean, listen, I, during that Super Bowl, the week of that Super Bowl 36, Bill used to, he was just pounding everybody head that Marshall Faulk was the head of the snake. As great as Kurt Warner was, and obviously Ozzie Bruce, Torrey Holt, it was Marshall Faulk who was the engine behind the whole thing. And it's the same thing with the 49ers. Christian McCaffrey is the engine to the whole thing. And we know that as much as we talked about this Chiefs defense and how good they've been throughout the year and in the postseason, they're actually vulnerable against the run. I mean, think about it, they've been very vulnerable against the run. And so if you're Steve Spagnuolo, the one person you gotta, make sure you gotta take away is Christian McCaffrey, because we know that at his core, Kyle Shanahan wants to run the football. He wants to run the football because everything is predicated off of that. Yep. So if you take away Christian McCaffrey, now you're putting a lot more, Deebo Samuel, they got to implement him more in the run game, and other people are going to kind of rise up the ladder as far as importance, as far as what they want to do offensively. But I think it starts with Christian McCaffrey. If you take him away and somehow, some way, put this thing on Brock Purdy's shoulders, at the end of the day, you want to say, okay, I like my guy, Patrick Mahomes, better than their guy. And if he beats me, I can live with that. But I can't live with Christian McCaffrey going off and doing the things that we've been accustomed to seeing him doing.
You were 100% correct in terms of the Chiefs' weakness there. Their run defense has been a problem. Niners' run defense has been a problem. I know we talk about the quarterbacks. We talk about the passing game all we want. This could be a game where it's going to be about who can run the ball more effectively or who can stop the run more effectively between these two teams. But now, as we finish up here, Damian, I got to ask, give me a prediction. Who do you think is winning this game, and why do you think they're winning the game?
Yeah, I'm going Chiefs in this game. I'm going Chiefs over 49ers, and I think it's going to be a very close game. It's going to be a very physical game. But there's a couple things that I look at. Number one, I look at Andy Reid. I look at Patrick Mahomes. I look at how well coached this team is. Steve Spagnuolo's done a tremendous job with this defense. They don't allow a lot of explosive plays. That means they force you to be patient and go the long, hard route, which a lot of teams struggle with. And ultimately for me, I look at number 15, the quarterback. This guy everyone knows generational, but you know what he does? He manages the game better than anyone else in the league because he doesn't turn the ball over. He makes the right plays when it's needed most. And when you have that, I just think that that's the best commodity that you can have playing at the quarterback position, a guy who won't lose the game. More teams, and this is a Bill Belichick quote, he said it all the time, more teams find ways to lose games than win them. And when I got a quarterback as special as Patrick Mahomes, who doesn't turn the ball over, who doesn't put the team in bad positions, I'll take that over anybody. So that's why I'm going with the Chiefs.
Can I tell you a story, Damian, as we finish up here, about the last time these two teams played? Okay, this is a story for you.
Yep.
I picked the Niners to beat the Chiefs. I was like, their defensive line is great. They're better running the football. The Chiefs have weaknesses in their secondary. Their defense isn't very good. And man, for three quarters of that game, I felt so smart. The Niners were dominating, beating them up front. They were whipping them. Mahomes was turning the ball over. I was like, man, I am so smart. I can't wait to just brag about how I got this game right. And then the fourth quarter happened. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I have to spend the next 15 minutes rooting against Patrick Mahomes and hoping he doesn't do something great. And I was like, you know what? I'm not doing this again. I'm not doing this to myself again. If they get back here, I am picking the Chiefs every time. And I have picked the Chiefs every time since. and I will have to pick the Chiefs here because I don't want to have to put myself through four quarters of hoping Patrick Mahomes does not make magic happen.
Bill, I picked against the Chiefs against Buffalo. I picked against the Chiefs against the Ravens. Do you really think I'm going to pick against the Chiefs in the Super Bowl? There is no way in the world I'm picking against Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes in the on the biggest stage. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it.
Yep. Exactly what you said about making Brock Purdy beat you. If Brock Purdy beats me, I'm good. I will say, you know what? I'll tip my cap, Brock Purdy. I don't want to have to make Patrick Mahomes beat me with this prediction. So I'm going Chiefs as well. But Damian, it's a blast having you on. I learned more about how offensive linemen think than I knew before coming into this show. I learned more about the battle in the trenches. That was exactly what I was hoping to have happen. Thank you so much for hopping on.
Bill, thank you for having me on, man. It was a pleasure.
All right, thanks so much to Damian Woody. Hope you guys enjoyed today's show. Plenty of other audio happening this week. We have another show coming as well with NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal talking more about the passing side of things. Greg has not played in the Super Bowl like Damian, but Greg, a very astute football follower, someone I love talking to about the game. And we have the audio from our live show coming as well. Myself, Kevin Clark, Mina Kimes, and Dominique Foxworth breaking down the Super Bowl from our live podcast here in Vegas. We'll have the audio from that in our feed. So plenty of audio for you to listen to here as we get ready for the Super Bowl. Thanks so much for listening, and more coming later this week.